Welcome to Non-Human Radio, where we talk animal rights and veganism every Wednesday from 5:30 to 6 p.m. here on KZFR 90.1 FM or online at kzfr.org. You can also find us on Facebook at Non-Human Radio. I'm Jeannie Trezino.
And I'm Robert Jones. Tonight on Non-Human Radio, Stephanie Bain joins us to discuss Braving the Cage. Also, a recap of last weekend's Conscious Eating Conference. All that, plus the vegan calendar of events, coming up next. Jeannie, welcome to another week here, Jeannie.
Here we are. It's been a long week already, and it's just Wednesday.
It's already Wednesday. So, Jeannie, what did you do over the weekend, as if I don't know? Tell us.
I did a road trip to Berkeley for the Conscious Eating Conference, which was held at the David Brower Center.
The David Brower Center in Berkeley, the Conscious Eating Conference. What's the Conscious Eating Conference?
It's an annual conference that's organized by United Poultry Concerns and the Bay Area Organization of Animal Advocates. And they bring together a panel of speakers on ethical issues related to food animals.
Yeah, and I believe this is the fifth Conscious Eating Conference, right?
Yep.
And I think that it's sponsored by Karen Davis's group, United Poultry Concerns. Is that right?
That's correct.
UPC. And do you know much about UPC?
I know they've been around for a long time, and they were one of the first single species advocacy groups. So Karen Davis, who has a PhD, just became smitten with chickens and other poultry and just found that they were such an exploited species that she felt that she needed to be their voice, and she's been nonstop ever since.
And how long, she's had that organization now since early 90s?
Correct. Correct. Yeah.
Here's what's interesting too. So I can reveal now that it's over that I'm asking you these questions, but actually I was there with you at the conference.
I saw you there too. You rocked it.
I rocked it. Thanks, Jeannie. Yes, I gave a talk there. I'll talk a little bit about my talk in just a moment. But what I thought was interesting was that Karen, who is when I think about anyone in the animal rights world who is an advocate for chickens and ducks and other poultry bird game animals.
Do you want to name them? The species involved are
chickens, turkeys,
quail, because you can buy quail eggs in town at Chico Natural Foods, I noticed. Ducks, which get exploited for liver, also for their liver, as in the foie gras business.
Right.
And I'm trying to think if there's any other species. I think that's, we hunt pheasant. Animals are raised on game farms and released to have a sporting event to hunt them down.
Right. And what I thought was interesting, one of the things that was interesting was, so she has this chicken, basically a chicken rescue, which she has, right? She has a rescue over there in Maryland, or it's in Virginia?
Virginia.
And her organization is called United Poultry Concerns. I found that so fascinating when I first heard about that, because you don't usually hear animal rights people referring to chickens as poultry, because poultry is a kind of euphemism for a slaughtered, executed, cooked chicken, right?
Yeah, it's interesting. United Poultry Concerns definitely has the ring of, it could almost be a farm advocacy group. It could be a business group for the poultry business.
That's true. And I thought that was interesting when she talked about that. She thought that that was part of the reason she used the term United Poultry Concerns, is because it's kind of a smart title, because people may think, oh, this is an advocacy group for the chicken industry, for example.
A marketing business. And she is marketing for the hens, but for them and not for them on people's plates.
Well, Jeannie, when we were there at the conference, we were sitting together, and I noticed that I saw your role there almost as a roving reporter, because you were as at each presentation that was given, and I believe it was probably about a dozen presentations that day, maybe something like that.
I think there were more like 10, but
10.
Yeah.
Okay. But you were intently, you were noting what was going on. You were sending out, tweets and posts and stuff. So you were like the on the ground reporter there at the at the conference. And so now, because of that, I get to ask you some questions about highlights of the conference. For example, can you give our listeners some idea of what were kind of the highlights of the conference from your tweets, and what did you see as some highlights you experienced there?
Sure. Of the speakers, I'll say that the speaker that brought the whole house to their feet in a standing ovation was Patrice Jones, who I've mentioned as we mentioned in the calendar previous weeks.
Right.
She was the speaker I wanted to see. She's the founder of a farmed animal sanctuary called Vine Sanctuary in Vermont. And she's in the heart of an ag area that mostly has dairy. But she has a fondness for all domestic species of animals. Anyway, she spoke from stories of her observations of animal relationships on her sanctuary, and then extended that out to how we should be more closely observing our relationships to each other as humans, as well as our relationships to non-humans.
Yeah, she was. I agree. Patrice Jones, and we're not related, but Patrice Jones is an amazing. She's an amazing activist in that she rescues all different animals, and she has, like you said, the Vine Sanctuary. But she's also an intellectual. She's an academic in the sense that she publishes professional papers, and she's very influential in the animal rights movement. And one of the things that she focuses on, and she focused on this in this talk, which may be new even for vegans. A lot of people who are vegans focus solely on speciesism and the plight of animals, which is very important. But one of the things that she focuses on that she's most well known for, and she's wickedly smart, as you point out, she gave a great presentation. She focuses on what she calls intersectionality, the notion that there are these kinds of oppressions that are intersecting oppressions. For example, the most common, well-known kinds of oppressions we think of in the United States are things like racism and institutional level racism and sexism. And what she's really amazing, the kind of cutting edge stuff she does, is tying together racism and sexism and ableism with instances of speciesism.
And let's tie that into activism. She takes all these insights and applies them to changing the current condition. In fact, she described intersectionality as an approach to problem solving, which is so important, because it's one thing just to be an academic and write about situations and just describe them as an observer.
Right.
It's quite another thing to be both observer and activist at the same time, and she's amazing at that.
That's true. That's true. Well, in case you just tuned in, you're listening to Non-Human Radio on KZFR 90.1 FM, Chico, and worldwide at kzfr.org. So yeah, Jeannie, she was amazing, and this whole notion that, you know, you can be an activist. She's a queer feminist activist, animal rights. Just an amazing. She was. I have to say, right? She was like a force to be reckoned with, and it was really a beautiful thing to watch.
You know, her presentation was without notes and without a PowerPoint, so she stood out from most of the other presenters in that regard. And yeah, it was remarkable. It's remarkable. I highly recommend that folks pick up a copy of her book called Oxen at the Intersection if you're interested in activism and how activism is kind of like driving a car but having a very unstable steering wheel. This book is a great examination of a particular animal activist.
Okay.
The book is... The Oxen at the Intersection refers to a specific incident at a college regarding two oxen that were maintained on that college as farm animals to mm-hmm. plow. And her name is Patrice Jones, P-A-T-T-R-I-C-E, Jones, and it's a great read.
Yeah, Patrice Jones, great. And she has Vine. If you search Google for Vine Sanctuary, she'll come up.
Yep.
So there's Patrice Jones, amazing presentation. Any other things stand out? And I'm not fishing for a compliment here, Jeannie, but I'm just wondering if you saw anything else there that impressed you.
Sure. Patrice Jones got the first standing ovation. But I have to say, your talk was something that the attendees seemed like they were hungry to hear, because your talk got the first big applause. You were the third speaker, but you got the biggest applause. So I was like, rock on, Robert. And your talk about how not to be vegan and the various flavors of veganism, I think people wanted to hear that. I think they wanted to hear about identity and food choices and ethical choices and how veganism is just sort of a stage. It's an aspiration.
Yeah, that's one of the things that, you know, after I gave my talk, and I was really impressed and I was honored that I, you know, people were clapping and they were, they came up to me afterwards when we had the lunch. I had a number of people come up to me, and the message that I heard consistently over and over again was that the kinds of things that you said in your talk, those are the kinds of things that I've been thinking about or I've been talking to my partner about, and it was good to hear someone express them, you know, in this kind of public forum. And in a nutshell, I think one of the things that people latched onto in what I had mentioned, and also just to let you know, all these talks are going to be posted on the United Poultry Concerns website or on their Facebook, on their YouTube channel. They have a YouTube channel,
right? And they'll link to their own website, and those will be. As soon as they get released, I'll go ahead and put it out on social media and do a show update. I'll do a blog post on that at nonhumanradio.com.
Great. So, yeah, you know, one of the things I think that people connected with, one of the things I was focusing on in that particular talk that I, you know, and the other thing is when you're standing before 200 people and you're giving a talk, you can tell when it's resonating. You can see people's heads nodding and you can see people sort of grooving with you and you get in that zone. So it felt really good to feel like I was connecting with these people there in Berkeley. But one of the things I think that I connected with them on was the issue of the effectiveness of being a vegan and feeling like you're actually making a difference when with your choices. And too many times we feel pretty much impotent when it comes to whether we have an impact in helping reduce suffering for animals. So a lot of people told me that was important to hear the message that, yes, you can actually make a difference in these kinds of ways, you know, in your whatever your level of activism is. But also, one of the things that I think is an important critique for all of us to take away, regardless of what your activism, your expression of your activism is, whether it's animal rights or whether it's prison abolition or whether it's homelessness, one of the things that I think it's important to resist is, and I didn't talk a lot about this, I didn't use this term in the talk, but I think there's a term that I've seen bandied about, and that is what's called the commodification of dissent. Let me give you an example. I was recently reading an article. You know, Beyonce did that whole thing on the Super Bowl where she came out and it was this stupendous presentation and she had her dancers and they were kind of dressed like Black Panthers, the dancers.
I saw it, yeah.
And that got a lot of buzz online. There were a lot of race scholars talking about that.
There were a lot of racists talking about it.
And thank God for them. We really need their opinions. But putting them aside, the race scholars, what they were discussing, there was a big kind of discussion about whether or not Beyonce should have used the Black Panthers to use them in a way as a spectacle, right? And I think it was a really interesting discussion. But my point is that...
Yes, what is the point?
The point is that... I'm glad you asked that question because I'm going there right now. The point is that too many times activists, like, for example, activists like the Black people who follow the Black Panthers, or in this case, vegan animal rights activists, are too easily convinced that the kind of dissent that animal rights activists like people like Peter Singer, people even Henry Salt, going back to the early movements, these people
who
were
you going to say Henry Spira?
Henry Salt is old guy, but Henry Spira, Henry Spira as well. Well, he's dead too, but Henry Spira. Henry Spira, he is an example. So these are the kinds of people who are on the front lines, and they were radical, and they were this kind of they expressed dissent against the norms with regard to the treatment of animals. And what I think is important is that we keep in mind that ultimately we're doing this because there are animals suffering, and we don't want to get too much in the notion. Like, you know, when I see a Che Guevara T-shirt, and I feel like, oh, he's turning over in his grave because now he's a brand. I think that we as animal rights activists, we have to be cognizant of the fact that, you know, corporations are they're happy to commodify whatever it is that we want to buy and sell in our activism. So I think we have to retain a little bit of an edge. We have to still retain that dissent.
So in a nutshell, I think what I took away, and I think what a lot of people resonated with in three words, is that you cannot buy your way out of animal exploitation.
Excellent.
That underlying your vegan purchase is a system that really doesn't value any individual, whether it be non-human, human, a worker in the fields,
right?
Many other issues like that.
Jeannie, so that was, I talked there for 50 minutes. You could have just said all that in 5 minutes and saved me that. So that was a great synopsis. Well, it was fun anyway. You know, while we were at the conference, I noticed that there was, and before I continue, I have to say one more thing. In case you've just tuned in, you're listening to Non-Human Radio on KZFR 90.1 FM. Chico and worldwide at kzfr.org. Jeannie, when we were at the conference, as there are with a lot of conferences, in the lobby there were a bunch of people who were tabling for different animal causes. One of the tables I saw there was Animal Place, and we've talked about Animal Place. In fact, we've had Jonathan Hussein from Animal Place,
right, with his Food for Thought campaign.
Food for Thought campaign, and there was a woman who I was introduced to, who we happen, just by coincidence, to have in the studio right now. A woman named Stephanie Bain, who is from Animal Place. Jeannie, can you tell us a little bit about Stephanie before we bring her into the discussion?
Sure. Stephanie Bain is an activist who coordinates the Brave the Cage campaign for Animal Place Sanctuary in Grass Valley. She tours universities in Northern California with a human-sized battery cage in order to educate students on the plight of hens that occupy 95% of the country's egg farms. Stephanie has been vegan for almost 15 years, and I had the pleasure of volunteering with her for the 3 days that she ran the Brave the Cage campaign on the Chico State campus today, through this week.
Nice. Stephanie, welcome to Non-Human Radio.
Woohoo!
Thank you. It's so nice to be here.
Oh, can you? We didn't have your microphone up.
Thank
Little
you.
Groundhog's Day. Great. Stephanie, welcome. So Stephanie, and Jeannie had just mentioned the Brave the Cage. What the heck is Brave? What is this Brave the Cage? What can tell us about that? What's
Absolutely.
Going on?
Brave the Cage is a campaign of Animal Place. Animal Place is a sanctuary in nearby Grass Valley, California, with hundreds of farmed animals that live a wonderful life on our sanctuary. For the Brave the Cage campaign, we attend universities and sometimes other events, farmers markets, with a human-sized battery cage in order to demonstrate how hens live on egg farms in the United States.
Stephanie, let me interrupt you for a second. What is a battery cage? What is that?
Absolutely. So a battery cage is an egg industry term, and what they are little wire cages that are very small, where 5 to 8 hens are housed in these cages, and a hen has less than a standard piece of paper's room. They can't spread their wings, they can't move around. It's an incredibly intensive form of confinement on animal farms, and they're used in 95% of egg farms in the United States. So it's a particularly cruel and uncomfortable form of farming in the United States that's incredibly prevalent, and a lot of people do not know about this.
So wait, let me get something clear.
Yes.
So here's an image I have. When I go to my local, say, even if I go to my local health food store, like, Whole Foods or something, and I have, and I buy these eggs and I think they're organic, and, you know, and I think, oh, here's organic eggs, and there's a little picture on the, maybe on the carton of a little chicken running around and stuff. So now, are you saying that 95% of the eggs that are produced in the United States for consumers involve taking hens lay eggs, right? They're the female chickens, and they're actually stuffed into these battery cages?
Correct.
So they're not running around and like I picture them?
Yeah, so yes, so 95% of eggs come from this type of confinement on farms. And there's a lot of terms used, and it's becoming more popular, especially amongst Californians. Things like cage-free, free-range, pasture-raised. And so this might not include cages, but at the end of the day, these are kind of marketing terms. So maybe there's a cage-free facility, and then there's a bunch of chickens still walking around on a wire floor. It's an incredibly filthy establishment. They don't have a lot of room. They may never see the light of day in their entire life. So at the end of the day, marketing terms, these are not good conditions. Another part of egg farming to consider is that at hatcheries, when these chickens are first born, all of the males are killed within a couple of days of their birth. The male chicks obviously are not going to lay eggs, so they have no use for the hatcheries. The hatcheries can't sell them to egg farms. So those chickens are going to be killed. Those little, cute, fluffy yellow chicks are going to be killed within a couple of days. This can be through suffocation. It can be through a masticator, which is basically throwing these chickens in this big grinding machine.
Good God.
Definitely an
unpleasant experience.
Wait,
these are those little chicks. I mean, as Easter approaches, right. I have to say, as a child, I remember getting little cards because I grew up, I'm a recovering Catholic, so I grew up, I went to Catholic school. I remember getting a little card for Easter, like from my grandmother, and had a little like fuzzy little chick. You mean to tell me that the egg industry, when a chick hatches, if it's a male, that chick is either thrown away or it's crushed to death instantly within the first few hours of its life?
Correct. And so even if somebody has backyard chickens, they may be buying those chickens from these exact type of hatcheries. So these male chicks are kind of this forgotten, sometimes unknown victim of the egg industry.
Wow. That's amazing. So what is this? What is Brave the Cage? What is that all about?
So,
and Jeannie, I want you to describe, you actually braved the cage yourself.
A few times.
So yeah, tell us what this is, Brave the Cage.
So the Brave the Cage campaign, so these cages, these battery cages, are Animal Place thinks is particularly evocative form of animal farming. So we decided to make a human-sized version so individuals could get inside these cages and just see how crowded they are. And I said earlier, 5 to 8 birds are typically housed in these cages. And in general, when we go to universities, I don't want to put more than 4 people in the cage, which I think is just illustrative of how horribly small these cages are.
How long do the hens stay in the cage? What's the typical lifespan?
So the birds are usually put in the cage for 1.5 to 2 years. And at that point, they might stop laying as many eggs. So they're taken out of those cages, and then they're killed, usually gas, and there's other forms to kill these birds. And hens can live up to 10 years, maybe more. So they're killed at a very young age. And there's, not that it particularly matters, but they don't use these animals for meat. It's a completely different bird. They're just killed and thrown away like garbage.
Let me interrupt just for one moment. In case you've just tuned in, this is 90.1 KZFR FM in Chico, listener-supported community radio for Sacramento Valley, the foothills and beyond. So Stephanie, this is actually kind of shocking for many people to hear. You know, and what's interesting about this is people will often say, when I say I'm a vegan, people will say, well, why don't you eat eggs? What's it's an egg? What, you know, what I can understand not wanting to eat bacon because they're killing the pig. But it sounds like from what you're saying, eggs are the production of they're the end product of cruelty and mistreatment. It's a life of suffering for a hen.
Absolutely. I don't think there's any reason to rank suffering necessarily, but the egg industry, when you're looking at it, it's particularly cruel and horrible, and hundreds and thousands of animals are killed for this industry. This is not an industry where no animals are being killed, not at all. And animals are suffering in horrific ways. Most chickens that are raised for eggs never see the light of day.
Terrible. Terrible.
Most chickens never get to spread their wings.
It's a tragedy. And Jeannie, can you tell us about your experience? Because you actually braved the cage yourself. And a little birdie, no pun intended, told me that you dressed in a chicken suit and braved the cage. So can you relate that experience?
I did. I was.
What happened there?
I was the draw. I was the spectacle, attracting the attention of many college students as they walk by busy on their cell phones and listening to music. I was the one beckoning them to come and face the reality just a little bit of the choices of their food choices. So I would cheap out, hello, and ask them to come over and spend 2 minutes just to get some information, sign up for the Animal Place email list and get some great information and recipes. And then if they wanted to step into the cage and feel what it's like. It's interesting because the cage is a replica, but human sized. And you can really feel what it's like to stand on wire for a day or for an hour. And you try to extrapolate that out to a lifetime, and it's just incomprehensible.
It's terrible.
We are not set up to understand the type of suffering that we inflict on hens for the sake of an egg.
So how many people, today you were at Chico State, you've been here for 3 days. Today was your final day at Chico State, with challenging students and passersby to brave the cage. Approximately how many people, actually besides Jeannie, our intrepid co-host, how many people stepped into that cage and braved the battery cage on campus?
I would say about a dozen today went inside the cage. And a lot of people just come over and they look at the cage and they just get some information and are a little intimidated to step inside. And it's a great visual also because you just see the size for your body. And sometimes Jeannie's just hanging out and they're by herself. You're able to see it that way too. It's definitely a completely different experience though when you step inside. So we strongly encourage that. Even for myself, first getting inside with a group of people, you really have this empathetic feeling. It makes you feel a little bit sick to think of yourself living in these cages, not being able to move, smashed in with others for your entire life.
And there's two ways that the cage experience that we have on campus is very different from what the actual hens go through. One, we're not debeaked, right? Hens are debeaked at a young age so that they don't peck each other to death. And also, we have no idea of what the odor is like. These hen houses are just really poorly ventilated. There's no way they can ventilate enough for 1,000 or 5,000 hens in one barn and keep that air clean.
Well, Stephanie, you are doing tremendous, heroic work on the road. Now, when this tour, Brave the Cage, where will you be heading? Where have you been? Tell us a little bit about that.
We've been to lots of campuses in Northern California, and we have all of the information at bravethecage.org. We have our entire upcoming schedule for the rest of the semester. We've been to UC Berkeley, UC Santa Cruz, San Jose State, Sacramento State, UC Davis. We've been to lots of community colleges. So we plan on continuing to hit the Northern California campuses until the end of the school year.
Excellent. And Stephanie, for listeners who want to get more information either about Brave the Cage, about the plight of egg-laying hens, about Animal Place, is there a website? Where can they go from here with this information and get involved?
Definitely. BraveTheCage.org has information about our campaign specifically if you just want to check it out. We have information about egg farms. We have information about egg-free eating. And then animalplace.org has information about our sanctuary, and it's in nearby Grass Valley, about an hour plus away. It's a great opportunity to interact with these animals and to see them living a happy life and see that they're beautiful animals that are just like us, wanting to live free.
Well, Stephanie, thank you very much. That's really amazing stuff you're doing. Thanks for coming into the studio and sharing and really doing tremendous work out there.
Thank you so much for having me.
Thanks. Well, Jeannie, it looks like we're just about out of time for this week's show, but not before our animal rights subversive thought of the week. What is that, Jeannie?
I'm happy to bring to you my choice for animal rights subversive thought of the week, which comes from vegan actress Ivana Lynch, who everybody should know played Luna Lovegood in the Harry Potter movie series. And she said at a talk, killing and eating animals is a betrayal of our own core humanity.
Well, that's true. It is. Well, Non-Human Radio is made possible through the generous contributions of KZFR listeners like you. Thanks to our engineer and friend, Sue Hildebrand.
Yay, Sue!
Woo!
This has been Non-Human Radio, a production of KZFR 90.1 FM, Chico. The views and opinions expressed on this broadcast are entirely those of the hosts and do not in any way reflect the opinions of KZFR, its board, or its staff. Our theme music is Ready to Fall by vegan activist rockers Rise Against.
Go Rise Against.
If you missed any portion of this show, or you just want to listen again, or have your friends or family listen, visit us online at nonhumanradio.com, and be sure to stay tuned for The Real Issue with Sue Hildebrand. Until next week, be different, be better, be kind.
And go vegan!
Every action has a reaction.